Good evening, everyone. I'm Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and we are very happy to have you with us tonight at this Kingborough Council meeting. It's 5:30pm on Monday, the 10th of August 2020. And as I always say, we really appreciate you tuning in and being with us. We know there's a lot of competition for eyes on a Monday night. If you've got the news coming up, I'm sure that'll be a temptation, but why would you want to be anywhere else than with us when we have such an action-packed agenda for you tonight? Don't worry about Ninja Warrior, because we've got policies and procedures to update, and we look forward to you watching on. I'd like to start tonight by letting you know that this council meeting is being video recorded, as you can see through our Facebook page, and that will be up online probably forever. But if not, our audio is also recorded, and the General Manager has just informed me that he has started the audio recording, so it's also available on our council website, as well as the agenda and minutes. And that's a good reminder as well, if you want to follow along with what we are talking about tonight, you can go on the council website and download the agenda, have a read, and then it'll be easier for you to follow along with what we're talking about. But before I go any further, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, their culture and Indigenous rights. The attendees this evening is myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Tony Ferrier. John Breen is our Chief Financial Officer. Our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services is Daniel Smee. Our NRM Coordinator is Liz Quinn. Our Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox. And our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. And we have no apologies, we're all here. Confirmation of minutes. There's a motion within the agenda that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 14 held on 27 July 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Would anyone like to move and second that? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Since the last Council meeting was held, we have held a workshop, and that was on progress at Kingston Park. Next item is declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor yes. Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I declare an interest in 23.1 in the closed session, and I'll be leaving the room.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. No other lights are on, so we will move on. Would anyone like to transfer an agenda item this evening? And there are none. The next item is questions without notice from the public. As I've been saying every week, we are sorry that members of the public are unable to be with us in person in the gallery at the moment, and we hope that in time we'll be able to have people back. We are glad you are watching online, and if you have a question that you would like to ask Council formally, you can always do that by putting a question on notice to the General Manager, and you can email him kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Clearly say it's a question on notice for the agenda. The question will be printed in the next Council agenda, which will be on the 24th of August, and you'll see the response there. It's the best way to get a formal response from Council. Of course, you can also just put a comment there if you've got a quick question, and we'll come to you in the Facebook page. We'll come to you as quickly as we can. Questions on notice from the public. So this is an example of what will happen if you put your question on notice. In that agenda on page 2, you'll see one question on notice in a number of different parts about the North Roslyn Avenue 40 kilometres per hour speed reduction community consultation from Tricia Ramsey, and there's an officer's response there from David Reeve. We now move to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you.
Then Councillor Bastone.
Thanks very much, Mayor. My first question is about the Sustainable Hobart Action Plan. Hobart City Council is to create its own pumped hydropower while purchasing solar energy from households under its draft Sustainable Hobart Action Plan released yesterday for public comment. My first question on this is, what is our council's response to this announcement?
Mr. Uy. I think we'll take it on notice, Mr. Corrett.
Thanks very much, Mayor. And my second question on that is, inside this action plan, Goal 2 under mobility includes the, quote, installing the infrastructure to fast charge electric vehicles in Hobart, and that is listed as having a short time frame. Will Hobart's public push for a much larger fast charge electric vehicle network disincentivise economic investment in Kingborough from fast charging networks? And if so, what are we going to do to rectify this?
Notice. Take it on notice as well, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I've got another question, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
So turning our attention to the quarterly summary action report, which is on page 154. My first question on this is, the Kingborough Community Resilience Working Group is not currently operating. I was just wondering if there's any detail that we'd like to share on that and when it's planned to reinstate that group's operations.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the working group was working up until December of last year, but due to poor attendance, it was agreed to close down that group for the time being. There has been a school of thought that it is best to deal directly with communities in terms of their local resilience rather than try and have a overarching municipal working group, but that's something that our emergency management coordinator is still working through. So I'm not sure if we will be reinstating that group. As I said, our emergency management coordinator is evaluating the best approach.
Thank you. Turning our attention now to page 156 in the section where it says prepare a local historic heritage code to protect historic cultural heritage. There's no comment in that section, and I was wondering, could we please explain that situation and why there's no comment?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, that is directly answered by the fact that it's a resourcing issue. We, for example, last month received a record number of development approval applications, just under 80 for the month, so it's a resourcing issue.
Thank you. My question now is about the Kingborough Climate Change Action Plan. My understanding was that that is also under-resourced. I believe it might be to the tune of 300,000. My question is, to what extent is it under-resourced, and what is the plan to get that back on track?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Cordova, that has previously been the subject of a brief report to Council. Council would be aware, the funding in this financial year was not available in the budget that Council adopted to fully address all of the actions identified. In relation to anything specific, I would have to take that on notice.
Thank you. My final question on this report, Mayor, is concerning the Conyngham public toilets, which remain delayed. I was just wondering, because I've received lots of community correspondence about this over a long period now, what's the time frame for the Conyngham public toilets?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the hold-up is due to the fact that it is a mainland contractor involved, but we remain hopeful that the project will be completed in time for the forthcoming summer.
Thank you. That's all for me.
Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. When the Gateway Cafe at Kettering was sold and the designated cool room within there was unavailable for residents on Bruny Island, a mobile cool store was put in at Kettering. The 6 months for that cool store are up. Will a DA be required to have the cool store extended, as it was only for 6 months?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the Chair, I'll take that on notice. I'm not aware of the ongoing arrangements for that cool store.
Thank you. My next question is regarding the car park at Cape Queen Elizabeth track on Bruny Island. It's quite inadequate, and the traffic is now along quite right along the main Bruny Road. Recently there was a 5-car accident there, which had to be attended to by SES. Can the council compel parks to increase the size of their car park? And if so, is a DA required?
Mr. Ferrier. Could you turn your light off, Councillor Bastone? Sorry.
Through the chair, the road is a state road, and the road is a state road, and the parking area is on National Park, so council doesn't have any direct involvement. We can certainly talk to parks about the issue because we're actually in conversation with them about a number of their tracks on Bruny Island. But ultimately, it's a park's problem in relation to the parking area and the capacity of that parking area. In terms of a development application, yes, if they wanted to extend their parking area, they would require a development application.
Thank you. My next question is regarding the rubbish bins and recycling bins that were promised for Adventure Bay and Alona. When will they be installed?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, just to follow up on that last question about the parking area, it may not require a DA if it's within their park management plan, within the national park itself, but we'd have to check that first. In relation to the waste bins, the arrangements are being made for those bins to be installed at Adventure Bay, Alona, Roberts Point, Lunawana and Dens Point, and they should be in before Christmas.
Okay, thank you. My next question is regarding the general store at Woodbridge, which has now substantially changed its function to a restaurant with the opening hours to match. Does it now have to provide parking and toilets, and did it need a DA to change the function?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, I'll take that on notice.
Thank you. My next question is regarding the Bruny Island Gateway Cafe, which no longer has any parking at all. They used to lease parking. Is it obliged to have parking?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, I doubt it. I imagine that store has been there for many years and is probably operating on an existing use provision.
The Gateway Cafe at the ferry in Kettering.
There has been a cafe there for many years. So, I mean, we'd have to go back and check the original permit to see what the requirements are, but I'll take that on notice as well.
Thank you. And my further question is in closed session, please.
Councillor Grace and then Councillor Fox. Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. Is Council undertaking any cleaning of the playground equipment with this codex? Are we doing any special cleaning of the playground equipment?
Mrs. Mayor.
Through you, Mayor, no, we're not. We did consider that, but it's cost prohibitive.
Surprising. Okay. My second question is water over Slattery's Road. I noticed in the Works Department's report coming up later in the agenda that they've just resheeted Slattery's Road, and goodness me, and they walked off and left the mess there again. And the water's coming onto Channel Highway and it's right on a corner. I know the General Manager had something done about it when I first raised this, so I need to raise that again. And my other question is I'd like to take in closed session. I have one in closed session that I need to deal with.
Just for the minutes, Councillor Grant, did you have a question about Slattery's Road? What's the
question? The question is, what are we doing about it this time?
Okay. General Manager.
Sorry if I didn't make
that
clear.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Grace, our works manager has been in contact with a couple of residents in relation to their private driveways, and arrangements are being made to have council replace at least one driveway that's already been agreed to by a resident of Slattery's Road. That will greatly improve that drainage situation.
And my final question is, Mayor, the old cafe shop at Electrona, the house burnt down, but it seems that they're going to leave the other structure there, which is an absolute eyesight. It is absolutely atrocious for tourists driving down that road. As councillor aware of what exactly what they've got planned for this building in the near future?
We'll take that on notice, Councillor Rose.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. When I was in at the Taroona opening of the Worm Farm, I was asked quite a few questions about Council's planned curbside collection of green waste and being introduced in October, and whether, in fact, it was appropriate to put weeds in that, in the green waste. And I looked up the Council's brochure on the matter, and it said that all weeds would be welcomed, and I am concerned that if mulch is produced from the green waste and it includes weeds such as twitch, etc., will it still be available as mulch for people to be able to use throughout the municipality, or will Council be spreading the mulch throughout the municipality and it might contain weeds? That's my concern.
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the Chair, the green waste will be taken away by Barwick's. It won't be staying within this municipality, so our best understanding is that it will be used for compost, so hence the weeds will be, I guess, neutralised in a way which is not going to continue to be a problem as part of the ongoing use of that compost.
Could we be reassured of that, please, Mr. Ferrier? It's just something that I think the community is quite concerned about.
Through the Chair, currently all their green waste is taken away by Barwick's and composted. The future curbside green waste will be the same, but I will confirm that and notify all councillors.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a few questions in the appendix. One regarding a general manager's meeting on the 20th of July with Metro. I'm just wondering if we could please have an update about that.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Mitchell, that was in essence an introduction to the acting Chief Executive Officer of Metro. That position's been advertised, and I don't believe an appointment for the permanent role has been made at this point in time.
Thank you very much. I thought it would be exciting news about buses or something. On page 110, there's a note saying the final results of the curbside waste and recycling bin audit have occurred, and there's recommendations mentioned in the audit. I'm wondering what the recommendations would be, please.
Through the Chair, I don't have the audit with me. I can't spell them out in any detail. The audit is quite comprehensive, and a lot of the recommendations have been distilled from some very complex analysis of what was in those bins. We're currently trying to put that together, I guess, in some sort of public format so that people can understand what the results of that will be. The results will also be presented to Council in an upcoming workshop. But at this stage, I don't have the information which is able to be presented.
Thank you. Two further questions. Have we conducted the audit of the recycling bins at Kingston Beach yet?
Unless someone knows the answer. I can tell you that in discussions with Manager of Engineering Services last week, there has been some audit work done, and that the level of compliance was not as good as we had intended, and I think we had hoped, and there's some discussion that will happen in terms of how we communicate with people better what needs to be going in the recycling and what isn't. But it's fair to say we always expected it wouldn't be 100% compliance, but that we have been somewhat disappointed with the what's gone on so far.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Wass and then Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to ask a question in closed session, if I may, please.
Okay, Councillor Grace.
Just one I forgot. I had numerous calls regarding the bus shelter at Conyngham Road. It's been repainted. It was painted by the public at no cost to anyone, pink. And that was the request for it to be painted pink. And then now I've been told it's painted green or blue or something. Now, that bus shelter does not belong to Metro. It belongs to the community. It was the one at Margate Oval was put up by the community that we removed here a while back. And that one down there was also put up, and there was one at Lectrona that was put up, as Councillor Wass and others would remember, all by the community. So why was it repainted? I mean, have we no respects for council for cancer in this council? Or
is any member of the staff aware of this? Otherwise, we'll take it on notice.
Thank you.
Okay, there are no other lights on. So, given that, I'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. The first question is from Councillor Reet on green waste bins, with a response from Mr. Jones. And the second question is from Councillor Wass about school buses stopping at Metro bus stops. And there's a response there from Mr. Reeve, also on page 4. Next item is motions of which notice has been given. At the time the agenda was compiled, no notices of motion had been received. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received last period. No petitions were received in the last period. Which brings us to page 6, which is the Kingborough Awards Policy, with a recommended motion on page 7, looking for a mover and seconder. Thanks, Councillor Grace, and seconded by Councillor Reet. Councillor Grace. Just put your light on, Councillor Grace.
I beg your pardon. I don't think there's a lot of major changes to this policy. I think we debated it once before and the date was changed, as I'm correct, and we all agreed to that. So I don't see much wrong with it.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Grace is right. There's no changes to the policy. No changes are considered necessary. I have one question, and that's if these go ahead, are we intending to invite nominations this month in August as per the awards policy?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that would be the intent.
Thank you. So I think it's a wonderful Kingborough Awards policy. I really enjoy the process that Councillor Reet chaired to determine the winners last year. There are some amazing people in our community. My only concern is with the date of the 6th of January. I'm pleased that it's not actually on the 26th of January, but I feel the 6th of January is a bit early in the year to be requiring staff, nominees, their families, councillors and the broader community to attend a formal ceremony. I am of the understanding that we don't have issues with attendance, but I would prefer it to be not quite so close to the end, well, to the beginning of the year when people are on holidays and hopefully off enjoying themselves. So I guess I'll foreshadow that I have an alternative motion, if this is lost, to hold the ceremony in National Volunteers Week, which is in May.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a few questions in regards to Councillor Westwood's point, and I guess it is, it is fantastic. It's not on the 26th of January, and great that we did move the awards to a different date. I'm wondering why was the 6th of January sort of chosen and put forward?
Well, it was a very long debate. It felt like hours. It may not have been quite hours, but it was a long debate. And the main reason being that it coincided with the creation of Kingborough Council, and that we felt like that was a good day to recognise the best and brightest of Kingborough people. The other advantages that we discussed at the time was that it's a pretty quiet time in the news, and that and what's come to pass since then is that our recipients are getting more better acknowledgement than ever before, particularly getting newspaper articles celebrating the work of volunteers, which we weren't always getting before. So those were some of the reasons. And but Councillor Westwood is right that one of the discussion points was that it is quite early in the year and there are some drawbacks to it, but on balance we felt that it was a good way to go, was to move to the 6th.
Thank you. So a few more questions on that. Over the last few, I'm quite sure I attended last year's awards celebration. I can't quite remember, but I'm quite sure it was well attended. And the staff organising it, there'd be no doubt that they have to be actually particularly. That's why we're advertising now in August. I understand the take-up on some of the awards is quite low, and we really have to sort of push to encourage people to attend, to apply and nominate people. And I'd probably speculate as well that staff would have to sort of get everything pre-organised prior to Christmas and have everything there and everybody aware that it's happening on the 6th of January due to that busy Christmas period. I'm just wondering at all if staff would like to provide any feedback in regards to what it means for staff having it on the 6th of January versus, say, during Volunteer Week, which I note the Mayor did make some great comments in regards to the fact that it's low on media on the 6th of January. Volunteer Week is often a very busy time for many communities nominating people. It's, really recognising volunteers, and perhaps we wouldn't get as much media coverage and local recognition for people. But I'm keen to hear on staff's thoughts in regards to time of that year for the staff and the organising of an event at that time of year.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, and certainly having it on the 6th of January does create somewhat of a challenge in terms of having to get everything prepared pre-Christmas, but having said that, it's what we've done for the past few years. It's certainly doable, and staff that work in community service are well used to working outside of normal business hours, if you like. So it's a challenge, but certainly not one that we've found to be insurmountable in the previous years.
Thank you. And so for National Volunteer Week, can you please remind me what we currently do for that time at Kingborough Council?
Mrs. May.
Through you, Mayor, we've done various things over the years. We've held a morning tea here for all our volunteers within the community that's been hosted by the Mayor. We've done various recognition of our volunteers type of activities within that week. We don't have a set particular activity that we do each year. It does tend to vary from year to year.
And just one more question in regards to, so when originally the thoughts were from changing the date from the Invasion Day, was the volunteer recognition, was the Volunteer Week put forward as an idea that possibly it could be changed to that date?
Mr. Smee.
No. Through you, Mayor, my recollection is that Council called for a report on this matter that canvassed a range of options, and Volunteer Week was one of those options that was canvassed within that report.
Thank you very much. I'm undecided which way to go at this stage, but keen to hear if other people have some thoughts.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I'm very passionate about these awards, having chaired the Awards Committee for the last 4 or 5 years. And I think we made the right decision 2 years ago in moving this away from the 26th of January to make it as inclusive as we possibly could. But I have to agree with Councillor Westwood that it is a difficult time of the year. Yes, the ceremonies are still well attended, but we've had occasions in the last couple of years where recipients themselves haven't been able to attend, and that is always really disappointing because it's their moment to shine. And so I think that if we can, if there is an alternative motion that is moved, I would like to see National Volunteer Week as the appropriate date, because after all, we are, if you look at the criteria for all of these awards, we're talking about residents who make selfless and outstanding contributions to the community life, and that is primarily through volunteering. So it is a great fit. It would take some pressure off our staff member who is responsible for the awards, because I know there is always a very tight deadline that we have to achieve, and it can be quite stressful to try and crunch that all in prior to the Christmas break and then advising everybody so that they can attend. Having said that, I just wanted to query something that I think might be an error from the previous policy. You may recall that we used to have the Community Event of the Year, and we changed it 2 years ago to the Community Group of the Year. So if you look at point 5.3 in the guidelines, point A, so that the heading is the Community Group of the Year Award to be, but then A doesn't make sense because A says awarded for a community event. That should say for a community group. So that needs to be amended. Not sure if we need a formal motion to be able to do that.
Mr. Smee, do we need to put this through a motion?
Mayor, I agree that that should be amended. Given it's clearly an error, I don't think it needs a formal resolution to do so. We can make that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, good pick up. And are the lights on at this stage? Look, I'll speak in defence of the 6th of January. Look, but not for long, because it doesn't matter what date we celebrate. People that it's a great time, a great opportunity to recognise the best of Kingborough. But the change to the 6th of January, in my view, has been tremendously successful. A level of recognition for the volunteers who win the awards has been much higher, because on the 6th of January, the journalists are desperately looking for news, and they're chasing us, and we get much better coverage of their achievements and success on that date. The weather's warmer, people are happier, people are on holidays, yes, but it doesn't mean they're away from home. And the events themselves have been tremendously successful, and we've seen that because they've been full of people and they've been much bigger than they had been previously. So I'd encourage people to support the 6th and the motion as it's currently put. To
just
sum up, Councillor Grace.
Sum up quickly, I agree, Mayor. I've had good positive feedback with the 6th of January, because a lot of people have relations over visiting around that Christmas period, which enables them to come along. So if you change it back to May or whenever you want to do, May not suit everybody, but I think it's been working fairly well, and as Mr. Smee has stated, that it's not going to cause a great deal of problems within staff. The staff absolutely do a fantastic job doing this, and same with the panel that go in each year to select them.
Okay, the motion moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Reid is that the Kingborough Awards Policy 4.2, as attached to this report, be adopted for a further 2 years. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, we'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Street, Bastone, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Wass and Winter. And those against is Councillors Reid and Westwood. The motion is carried. Next item is the Kingborough Positive Ageing Policy, and there's a recommended motion on page 12. Would anyone like to move and second that? Councillor Reid to move, and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. This is just an update of the aging policy. We have
Are you light, Paul?
Oh,
Sorry, Councillor Reid.
Beg your pardon, sorry. This is an update of Council's positive ageing policy. I remember when we actually updated this previously in 2016, I asked the question what we meant when we talked about older Tasmanians and positive ageing, and it was anyone over 50, which I found particularly frightening at that time, as I was approaching that age then. There are no amendments that are proposed here, so it's proposed to just endorse this for a further 2 years.
Councillor Mitchley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of quick questions on the policy. I'm wondering who sort of takes ownership of doing some of the work and the great statements in the policy.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, much of this policy is implemented through our volunteer program and by our volunteer program coordinator, but our two community development officers are certainly very mindful of the policy principles that are contained within this policy and do apply that to their various activities and events that they conduct throughout the year.
Thank you. There's just one comment, sorry, and I'm just trying to find it again. It was in regards to it was housing. Sorry, excuse me. I'm just trying to find it. Excuse me, everybody. I'm just trying to find that point. Sorry, Mr. Smee. I did actually speak to you about that one this afternoon. I can't remember. It's one of the policy principles in regards to an. That's the one, Councillor Bastone. Sorry, I just can't find it. Page 14. Oh, sorry. Yes, so it says support where possible the provision of appropriate and affordable accommodation options. I'm just wondering at all, what does that mean? It's a great statement, but I'm wondering at all if we're doing any work in that space and what does that mean?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, obviously Council doesn't provide a great deal in the way of affordable accommodation other than what we do on Bruny Island with the Glensin units. That would be our only direct way in which we meet that policy aspiration. The main way in which we achieve this is through advocacy. Obviously the state government through their affordable housing policy are the main players in this space, and we take advantage whenever possible to advocate for this particular issue.
Thank you for the clarification.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I think this is a terrific policy, and I think it's been terrific since 2013, and I support the changes and the review and the updates as we go forward. Excuse me. What's really important about it is that I understand that the needs for specificity and the detail, but as it says in the discussion there, that this policy is really aimed at a high level, and it's in effect a statement of support by Council for the rights of older people and an acknowledgement of the valuable contribution that they make to the community. And so as such, it contains a series of principles that guide the Council in its delivery of services to older members of the community. What I think is so important about it is that we recognise as a council the value that everybody brings, and we pay particular attention to the contribution of older people throughout our municipality, and we seek where we can to enhance their contribution and to enhance their the respect that they get in the community. And so the policy principles of making that pledge to provide communication on the provision of information to older people regarding the available services that we provide, but it's also the notion of inclusion, making sure that we provide for older people's involvement and ability to influence decision making and participate in community activities. So too is it important that the policy specifically stipulates that we're trying here to build community capacity. We identify and use the diverse skills and characteristics of older people throughout the municipality, and we pay respect to them for their ongoing contribution. So I think in addition to those, the policy principles of equity, responsiveness, accountability, and to promote programs which encourage older people to remain healthy, independent and safe are fundamentally important, and they're a testament to Kingborough Council's vision of putting the community at the heart of everything we do. And that means leaving no one behind. That means including everyone. So I think this is a really good policy, and I guess I just want to reiterate the importance of having these kind of high-level statements, not just with this specific issue, but of many other issues where we should be sending clear statements about our beliefs and our values to the community at large. Thanks.
There are no other lights on at this stage, meaning that I'll ask Councillor Reid to sum up.
Closed.
Okay, the motion, as moved by Councillor Reid and seconded by Councillor Mitchell, is that the Kingborough Positive Ageing Policy 4.10, as attached to this report, be adopted for a further 2 years. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Move on to the Kingborough Access Policy. There's a recommended motion, page 16.
Mayor, could I please move a motion for this matter to be deferred?
Yeah, it's a procedural motion, so there's no debate on it. Seconded by Councillor Westwood. The motion is that the matter be deferred. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Next item is the... page 21 is the unauthorised vegetation damage signage policy review. There's a recommendation on page 23. Would anyone like to move or second that motion?
I'll move it.
Councillor Cordova. And seconded by Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just finding our page here. So what we're looking at today is the unauthorised vegetation damage signage policy. And this was initially developed in 2010 in response to several instances of extensive vandalism of large trees on coastal reserves managed by council. The changes that we're looking at here today are not significant, but they do bring the policy in line with what I believe to be best practice, and also to make sure that we're still able to provide disincentives to individuals who seek to commit vandalism, essentially, of trees. So what we're looking at here is the most common reason for tree felling or poisoning on public land is to facilitate a sea view from a residence. And the difficulty here is in achieving proof of evidence that's required to prosecute an offender for the act under the Parks and Recreation and Natural Area bylaws. So within the policy, it makes provision for putting up signs that say this vegetation has been illegally damaged, and that provides a disincentive to the community. I think there's a larger conversation to be had here around how we strengthen these kinds of policies, and an important discussion about whether behaviour change comes through understanding of why it is that people shouldn't damage trees, because of things like the erosion of the coastline, threatened species, neighbourhood amenity. And I guess there's an ongoing debate around this notion of almost collective punishment, where when a tree gets removed and a sign gets put up, a large sign, does that unfairly punish the entire community? So I would personally like to see that the behaviour is changed to make sure that incidents like what took place in Snug, at the Snug Esplanade, and on the Snug foreshore and in Pearsall Street, never happen again. These are instances where trees have been poisoned, and the police were able to get involved and door knock the neighbourhood and things like that, which provides a significant disincentive for people to participate in this awful behaviour. I think it's important that we have strong education campaigns and that we engage the community in a positive way to make sure that they know that this kind of behaviour will not be tolerated and that we have mechanisms in place to enforce that. So the objective of this policy is to provide a very clear message to perpetrators who illegally clear vegetation on public land that the activity will not be condoned. And I personally would like to see a stronger relationship with police enforcement and also with writing to local community members when trees are damaged, poisoned or pruned to let them know that this is a matter with which the police could get involved, and it's also a matter that council takes very seriously and will enforce at every possible occasion. So there is an expectation within the community for council to investigate and deter the damage of vegetation on public land, and failure to respond in this instance, may signal to landowners that the behaviour is condoned, and that's the very last thing that we want. So I commend this policy to my fellow councillors, but I also would like to initiate a broader conversation about how we strengthen this message that this kind of behaviour is not condoned in Kingborough and that there can be serious consequences for taking these kinds of illegal actions. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Grace.
A lot's changed, I think, in the time when we raced out and put these huge big signs up in front of people's houses, which I was part of, the kickback from the community that had to suffer that. A few of the councillors sitting around the room was also part of it. Common sense has gone a long way since then, I believe, in this council. To be quite frank, the only instance that I know of since then has been those trees at Kettering. There was no signage, and I don't think the signage was necessary in that case neither, because the trees were already down, but the message got out, and council are very, very good at getting the message out now, and maybe we've got more technology to be able to do that. I think the signs, and I think the signs that one at Conyngham was chopped down by a chainsaw, had to be re-put back up. I think we spent somewhere around about $5,000-$6,000 on that particular sign, if I remember correctly. The one on Snug Esplanade wasn't so bad. It was put in the wrong place, so it didn't really matter. The trees that were cut down was up the road further, and we know who cut them down, but we couldn't prove it, and that's a fact. We couldn't prove it. But it got the message out. I mean, if we need something like this, I mean, I'll support this, but common sense prevails. And if we have to go back and put signs up, I believe a report should come back to council before any sign goes back up. And I don't think it says that in this report. But is that the intentions, Mayor? Staff will come back to council if there is a need to install such a sign again in the future?
Ms. Quinn.
Thank you.
Mm.
No.
I think the audio coming through on that, Ms. Wilcox?
No.
I'm not sure what's going on. Is it a yes or a no?
We're just having some microphone issues. Councillor Grace, we'll be right with you.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. Councillor Grace, at the moment, the policy, you're right, we removed the Category C signs, which were the larger signs, quite a long time ago from the policy, and it was those signs that required a report to council for them to be put in place. So at the moment, we've got the much smaller signs, Category A and B, and they're at the discretion of the general manager rather than council.
I would prefer it to read that it be come back to council, even though the general manager will no doubt advise us, but I'd prefer to know before the sign went up, and I think most councillors would. That was the problem before. We wasn't aware as councillors that these signs were going up, and that's where a lot of the backlash came upon councillors, and some councillors was abused, and a couple were almost assaulted by the public over these signs. So I don't want to see that again. I think it's only a matter of courtesy for us to know that they're going to go back up.
So you're not, Councillor, just to clarify, you're suggesting that councillors be told that some illegal vegetation clearing has happened and be told that the sign's going, rather than coming to council for a decision. You're just asking to if you can be let know that this has happened, is that correct?
That's correct, Mayor. That's all I'm asking.
The general manager's saying that's fine, we can let you know when. And I think in the case of the Kettering trees, that did happen, where we were informed not only by the community, as I'm sure you were, but also by staff, that there'd been an incident and that the policy would apply.
no sign went up, so that was good. It was handled.
Weather would apply, yeah. No other lights are on at this stage. So, in that case, I'll ask Councillor Cordova to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor. We've had a fairly constrained debate, I think, but ultimately this policy is to reduce and deter the illegal removal and or damage of vegetation from public land within Kingborough, and it provides a consistent framework with which to allow council to respond, and it provides an avenue to respond to those breaches when they occur. This is something that we as councillors need to remain vigilant to, not just because of the environmental damage that takes place, not just to the biodiversity risk that takes place, but also to people's neighbourhood amenity and the fact that we need to engender within this community a community spirit that we're all in this together, and that it's not appropriate to damage other people's property, and it's not appropriate to behave illegally. And we're trying to make Kingborough a great place to live, and when incidences like these take place, it reduces all of our amenity as well as providing very serious damage to the local environment. So I commend the policy, and I would like to particularly thank the staff involved for bringing this to us tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The motion moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Mitchell is that the unauthorised vegetation damage signage policy 5.7 as attached to this report be adopted for a further 2 years. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And those against, motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the financial report to June 2020. There's a recommendation on page 31. Would anyone like to move? Moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Minchley. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This report is to provide the June 2020 financial information to Council for review. There's no statutory requirement to do this, but it is best practice to enable us to adequately review Council's finances. The report we've been provided with has been prepared based on currently available information, as there is still information outstanding from external parties. The Council's underlying result for 2019-20 is a deficit of nearly $1.8 million. Of this amount, $1.3 million relates directly to the impact of COVID-19 in regards to lost revenue and additional expenditure. That said, it has been important for Council to provide support to the community, and this has come at a cost. Of note, user fees are $293,000 under budget, primarily due to the closure of the sports centre during COVID-19. Depreciation was $568,000 over budget. Hopefully next financial year we might be able to estimate that a little bit more accurately. And the dividend from Taz Water was $624,000 under budget. I did ask some questions of Mr. Breen, but I won't elaborate on what they were. Thank you for answering those, Mr. Breen.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question. It's regarding the $10,000 that C-Link are supposed to pay to the council each year to go into our infrastructure services. Well, it's $10,000 a year plus CPI each year. Is that in the on page 45 in contributions cash? The year-to-date budget was $10,000. We've only received $2,500. Is that the area where that $10,000 would be, or does it sit somewhere else within this financial statement? And have we been receiving it?
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. I'll have to take that question on notice. I'm not aware of that.
Okay, it's part of C-Link's contract.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a question about, it's a very broad question. So in the discussion, 4.1 rates are $317,000 over budget due to the general rate income of 217 I believe it's supposed to say $217,000 over budget, stormwater rate income of $31,000 over budget, and garbage rate income of $69,000 over budget. My question is, can you please elaborate why the discrepancy?
I ask this question every year. Mr. Breen.
Okay, through you, Mayor. Essentially, we do an analysis based at a particular point in time when we're coming up to do the budgets in regards to what our number of ratepayers are, the expected rate in the dollar, number of bins and all those sort of things, and come up with a figure based on that. After we do that, which is generally about March, we'll have 3 months where we get a lot of a few subs in, supplementary rates, so obviously new properties that are being going through the process at that point in time. This time last financial year, the auditor valuers office were having a lot of problems with a new software package they put in place, and so we had a couple of months where we didn't get any subs leading up to the March period of time, and then we actually got flooded over the last 4 months of quite a considerable number of subs coming through. So essentially we got a lot more than we expected, and hence a lot greater income than we expected.
I've got one question, which is just on the employee costs at $427,000 over budget due to a significant increase in the provision of annual leave, which is totally understandable. Even councillors know that there isn't many places to go. But how are we managing that? Because it does become a significant financial liability. How are we going to manage those employee annual leave periods, given that it's highly likely that Tasmanian borders are going to be closed for a lot longer, and there's going to be less demand for leave from staff?
Hey, through you, Mayor. Look, essentially, clearly what we do, we've got a policy or a couple of policies in place around long service leave and annual leave, and people who start pushing up towards the limits within those policies, we do start putting some pressure on them to say, look, you need to take some time off. Once they get to a certain level, we can actually instruct them to take time off. But generally, we're seeing the movement in people that probably had 5 or 10 days, and now they're getting up to 20, 25 days. So it's movement in the middle rather than at the top end. It's going to be a bit of an ongoing problem to us until borders open, because there's a lot of people that are just banking their leave. But certainly I would imagine coming up to the warmer periods that some people hopefully will take the opportunity to have a bit of a look around Tasmania and take a bit of time off then. This is going to be a bit of an ongoing problem for us for a period of time, I think.
And the other question I've got is, also noticed there was, and I forget the page number, sorry, $25,000 spent on the AFL game at the Twin Ovals. What was involved in that?
Mayor, that's all the costs incurred for delivering the match. So it's hire of portaloos, security, etc. But that's all then on charge to the AFL. So that $25,000 we would then invoice the AFL for, and we also received a $5,000 match fee for that.
So I know this is on the spot, but in terms of that game, do we make a loss on hosting the game, or was there a small profit on?
Mayor, I'd suggest we'd break even on it. In effect, the $5,000 match fee is offset by the work we put into preparing the ground, but certainly any additional costs are all picked up by the AFL, so I guess a break even result is fairly accurate.
Thank you. Any further questions? Councillor Westwood, would you like to sum up? Thank you.
Closed.
The motion is that Council endorses the attached financial report as at 30 June 2020. It was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Minchley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. And the motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and State Gymnastic Centre lease. And for a mover and a seconder, moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Minchley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. And with that, we say thank you very much for watching to all our Facebook viewers, and we hope to see you back again in 2 weeks' time at 5:30 p.m. for our next meeting. Thank you.